From the KUAR studios in Little Rock, this is the Week in Review podcast.
There are other times in our notes where it appeared as though he was striving for air. At that point, we didn't have the lurching anymore.
The execution of inmate Kenneth Williams on Thursday night has prompted calls for an investigation after reports that he was lurching and convulsing about 3 minutes into the lethal injection process. Williams is the fourth convicted killer put to death in Arkansas over a period of 8 days. KUAR and Arkansas Public Media explore this issue.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
I'm Michael Heplin.
And I'm Karen Trigo-Stewart. What happened last night and how is it linked to a controversial drug used in the deadly three-drug cocktail? We'll explain. Stay with us. So, Sarah, you were there last night covering the execution. And to be clear, you were not one of the three media witnesses who watched the execution, but you were there as those media witnesses gave their accounts and as the governor's spokesperson, J.R. Davis, responded. What happened last night?
Well, after several hours of stays from the U.S. Supreme Court reviewing last-minute legal challenges, the execution witnesses left the media room, and we didn't hear from them for about an hour, and then spokesman for the ADC came back and said, actually, the execution hadn't started yet. We had some questions about that. The witnesses came back, and he had been pronounced dead at 11:05. And Kelly Kissel, the editor, Arkansas editor of the Associated Press, gave an overview of what they had seen.
Since we're all on deadline, I'll start with the we all have in our notes as coughing, convulsing, lurching, jerking. With sound, even with the microphone turned off, we were actually able to hear things in the witness area from the execution chamber. The execution started at 10:52. That's when the announcement was that they were going to start the execution. At the time, Mr. Williams was speaking in tongues, and during that, they announced that they were proceeding with the execution. And toward the end of his prayer, He came back to English and made a statement, which tailed off as the drug took effect. There's a little bit of breathing, blowing out through his cheeks and stuff like that. But at 10:55, after having breathed through his nose throughout the execution, his body lurched forward as though we were trying to describe how to describe it. It was like if you're on a bumpy road and you hit a bump and your body gets thrown forward. It happened about 15 times in quick succession. This is about 3 minutes, 4 minutes into the execution. This would have been before the consciousness check. This would have been, Solomon's correct, this would have been only with the midazolam having been administered. And it took about 15 times, pretty quick succession. Maybe no more than 10 or 15 seconds. That slowed another 5 times at a slower rate. And then after, in my notes, I wrote down each time it happened and got to 20, and then it was over. After the 20th lurch forward, at that time, Mr. Williams was breathing through his mouth. And up until this point, he had been breathing through his nose. And so there are other times in our notes where it appeared as though he was striving for air, that he was, Knowles used the term in his notes, gasping. I had labored breathing, but it was a clear attempt to obtain oxygen. At that point, we didn't have the lurching anymore, but it was a pronounced heavy breaths.
All right. And so, Sarah, I understand that after that, the governor's spokesperson, J.R. Davis, came out and responded to that. He didn't watch the executions, but he had things to say.
J.R. Davis basically said that this is a common side effect of midazolam, that's what the medical community says, and that these were probably involuntary movements of an unconscious person. And he doubled down on this statement that the executions have been flawless this month. And the media challenged him about that based on these witness accounts. I think it would be helpful to understand the midazolam as it fits into the process and when these issues occurred. So after the IVs are successfully inserted, if they are, midazolam, which is used as a sedative and in this case is used intending to knock the inmate unconscious so that they don't feel anything afterward, there's a very large dose of midazolam given. and then there's a consciousness check that's supposed to be done after about 5 minutes. If the inmate is unconscious, then the other two drugs in the protocol will be given, and they work to paralyze the inmate and block their heart. The paralytic is apparently very painful, and it forces the inmate to stop breathing. And so if an inmate were conscious, they might actually be able to experience that. That's according to expert witnesses who've been testifying about these issues in court. If the inmate is not unconscious after 5 minutes, there's a second dose of midazolam that can be given. And as I think we all know by now, this drug midazolam is controversial because it's been involved in what so-called botched executions in other states, where inmates behave in a similar manner to what Kissel described, which is gasping for air, convulsing. So during the period, the first period that the first dose of midazolam was given before the first consciousness check is when, for up to 20 seconds, they saw this negative reaction. They said they didn't see his face move, or they didn't see him make facial expressions, and they didn't have any indication that he was in pain or that he was conscious, but he was writhing, I guess, so to speak, on the table during that period.
And Michael, I understand that the governor responded to this today. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the governor on Friday spoke with reporters, and you can hear here in his comments his take on this. He suggested that because the reactions that the inmate showed, Kenneth Williams, came only after the midazolam had been injected into him, not before the other two drugs, which really are the ones that kill the inmate. He suggested this shows he was not in pain. He made the point that he is a lawyer, and you can have five people witness the same thing but have five different interpretations. He does not believe there was pain suffered by Williams. And I'll go ahead and play this cut here. First, I'll mention that immediately after the execution, there were calls from the American Civil Liberties Union, as well as attorneys for Williams, for an independent investigation. He said he doesn't see the need for that, that this only needs to be reviewed by the Department of Correction, as it typically would after an execution. But here's what he told reporters at the Capitol Friday morning.
First, I'm not a medical doctor, and so, but I do observe and watch, and obviously want to make sure things work the way they should. And in talking to Director Kelly, and she can address it more, I went through what happened last night, and she went through it, and after going through the facts that she described, it was obvious to me that from her expression, there was not any indication of pain, that this 10 seconds of movement on his part was what was described as coughing without noise. And if you look at the inserts, package inserts for midazolam, you see one of the side effects is coughing. And so midazolam is a sedative, and from what I have seen and observed from the record, the 10 seconds of movement occurred during that first midazolam injection. And so it was not part of the second and third drug protocol. And so, you know, we will, there's no indication of pain, which is the most important part of it to me. From talking to her, it went according to protocol.
So suggesting that we didn't have this reaction after the second and third drugs are part of why he doesn't believe this was pain on William's part.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, can you put that into greater context for us?
Well, the governor said that coughing is a common side effect of midazolam. And just to reiterate what Kissel said, there was shaking, gasping, lurching. So I sat in on expert testimony over a week in federal court when this was given a preliminary injunction hearing. And what I took away from that is that experts disagree. I think the judge sided with the experts for the inmates that there is a probability that midazolam could cause a painful and unusual, cruel and unusual death. But there are very few human studies about the effect of midazolam on people, and also it's not used in a clinical setting either in this dose or alone as an anesthetic. And what I took away from all that is that actually we don't really know the answers to, even in the scientific community, at least, you know, from the experts that were in court, there is no consensus. And if there is, it's on the side of this seems to be causing problems. Also, the question about when people feel pain and when they're conscious is very debated. It's not clear what movements are a sign of consciousness and can be interpreted to be a sign of consciousness or a sign of pain. And we don't really have a way of knowing if they're in pain, that the inmate's not being monitored by, you know, a machine of any sort throughout the process. And then one way that we can get information after these executions happen is through autopsy reports. And sometimes there's fluid in the lungs, and that shows that the inmate has died a slower death than it might have appeared that they did. And so autopsies have been done on most of these men, and the reports will be available in about 2 months. And as far as an investigation goes, these are kind of questions for scientists right now that we don't, as a society, have an answer to. So you're hearing people kind of falling down on either side about what happened. And I think the bigger question is, how can we know?
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, so I understand that in the lethal injection cocktail, midazolam is given in a dose of 500 milligrams. Do we know the dose that is normally given for surgical procedures?
There's a slight range in testimony about that, but it seems the average is about 10 to 20 dose, 20 milligrams. And that would be in concert with other drugs under very specific conditions where midazolam, which is used mostly to cause anesthesia. So it does not necessarily block pain, is what experts said, or at least the experts for the inmates said that. The experts for the state disagreed in some areas, but it does cause people to forget what they have experienced afterward. And that's usually what it's used for in a clinical setting.
But I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of analysis over these four executions that were carried out. Attorneys, especially for the death row inmates, will probably be reviewing this, and there is a push for more study on midazolam and to really understand its effectiveness. The governor during this press availability was really grilled about a lot of aspects on this. But first off, we should remind listeners that the state supply of midazolam expires here at the end of the month, and that was a big reason for the rush here. Originally, we had eight inmates who were scheduled to be executed. The governor said he wasn't surprised that several of those ended up being stayed, but overall said he was pleased that four of these executions were carried out.
After decades of waiting, the families of the victims, Deborah Reese, Christine Lewis, Mary Phillips, Lorraine Ann Barrett, Stacy Erickson, Nikki Hurd, Gerald Jenkins, and Cecil Boren were finally provided the justice that they were promised, and they also saw that our system of laws have meaning.
And I'll read here the final statement, or at least part of it, that Kenneth Williams made. And the crimes he committed were especially gruesome. He killed four people, shot one additional person. He had been serving a life prison sentence for shooting and killing a University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff cheerleader. He also shot a friend of hers. He had apparently taken them to an ATM and got them to withdraw money, then shot them. He was given a life prison sentence, but within weeks of starting that sentence, he was able to escape from Cummins Prison. And Cecil Boren, that was the case he was sentenced to death for. He was a retired deputy warden who lived near Cummins Prison, and he apparently was killed by Williams, who then took his pickup truck and several weapons. At one point, there was a high-speed chase with police up in Missouri, and he collided into another vehicle, killing another driver there. And while in prison, he admitted to an unsolved murder in Pine Bluff. So four people were killed. But when he was asked for last words, this is part of his statement. I humbly extend my sincerest apologies to the families I senselessly wronged and deprived of their loved ones. He then listed the names of the four people. I was more than wrong. The crimes I perpetrated against you all was senseless, extremely hurtful, and inexcusable. I humbly beg for your forgiveness. Pray you find the peace, healing, and closure you all deserve.
And Michael, you mentioned forgiveness, and I understand that many of the victims' families have come forward and said they do forgive Kenneth Williams.
Yeah, we had conflicting when it comes to Williams. You had the family of the man who he was sentenced to die for said they were ready to not only be in support of his execution, but were there to witness it. You had the family of another victim, the driver involved in the traffic accident, as Williams was fleeing police, asked the governor not to carry out the execution, say they have forgiven him, and thought the execution would actually only bring more pain to them.
And Sarah, where do these cases go next?
Well, the federal case that I mentioned before actually is still open because although the Supreme Court didn't hear it in this case to stop these executions, the men who've been given stays of the eight are actually still a part of it. So it goes on. And I think that all of the what happens with the executions that have occurred and any issues that the attorneys can draw from that will become part of their argument for the other men. Also, there has been some discussion of possibly attorneys seeking to get Liddell Lee's DNA tested even after his execution. He was the first man put to death, and Stacy Johnson, who was also scheduled to be executed the same night, both of them requested DNA testing at the last minute. Stacy Johnson was given the testing, Liddell Lee was not, and there's little physical evidence in the crime that he was convicted and sentenced to death for. So there's been a lot of national attention on that case and the court's decision not to grant him a DNA test. He actually never had one. And his counsel who came in sort of at the last minute from the Innocence Project, which is a national group that's helped do DNA testing and helped represent inmates around the country, have said that he had, you know, ineffective counsel throughout his time in prison.
Yeah, the reports about how poorly some of these inmates were represented were really striking. NPR had an especially fascinating interview just about how some of the attorneys, one was drunk, clearly,
that
in court.
That was Liddell Lee's attorney.
Yeah, and just a whole host of problems when it comes to representation.
Mm-hmm. So we have DNA testing, insufficient counsel. Any other unresolved issues?
Well, for the men who are given stays, mm-hmm. there is a Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court case that has been argued about whether they, in general, inmates should be given independent mental health evaluations outside of the prison system. And that case is relevant for two men who were given stays in Arkansas. And when the Supreme Court rules on it, depending on what they rule, these men might have to be given that outside assessment about their mental health.
And for now, the state is not pursuing another supply of midazolam. The state has said all along it didn't think it could get any more of this drug because of the problem of drug makers not wanting their product used for executions for a number of reasons, not wanting, you know, the media attention, also saying there's some liability. But the governor was asked when he will try to execute more inmates, and a pretty honest response here.
I really don't even want to think about it right now, quite frankly. But, you know that I do my responsibility. And so, you know, if the attorney general sends over names that are subject to execution, then we will start the process over again in terms of dates, in terms of access to drugs. And because even though these victims have had justice in the cases of the four, there's a number of others that are still waiting for justice, and the verdicts of the jury have not been carried out. So we will do that responsibility when it comes.
Mm-hmm. And so, Michael, what does all this mean for the future of lethal injection?
That's been debated. There's even been speculation about, well, the difficulty in getting the drug. Could that even mean an end to lethal injection? The governor was asked whether or not the state should go to other methods of execution. He said at this point, this is what is Arkansas law, and unless the legislature or someone wants to bring this up again, he said, for now, pretty much this is it, at least for the time being.
And Michael, can you tell us a little bit about the vigils that have happened at the governor's mansion during these executions?
Well, there has been a regular group of people who have been holding vigils, not only on evenings when these executions have been scheduled, but even who have been maintaining very regular vigils outside of the governor's mansion. Clearly, this has drawn a lot of opposition from a lot of people who just don't feel it's the state's role that we should be executing people.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, any final thoughts on what this all means and going forward?
Well, I spoke to the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center this week, Robert Dunham, and he said that he thinks the way that this process has been carried out is doing long-term damage to the institution of the death penalty in the United States, and obviously that's his opinion, but I think that's the question that we're going to be looking for going forward.
And Michael, any closing thoughts?
Well, we'll see. It's hard to say, but this has been obviously very stressful on a lot of people, and the continual every evening, just even, you know, being at the prison and not even knowing what is happening, having filings on so many different levels, be it the Eighth Circuit or the U.S. Supreme Court, the Arkansas Supreme Court, county judges weighing in. It's just incredibly draining for everyone involved, and it's really been something to witness.
What, you're reminding me of when I saw Wendy Kelly in federal court, and I thought she looked especially tired for her, and you know, she chatted with media a bit and said something in an aside to me about, you know, she might retire.
And I can say that I covered the governor's media availability prior to the executions, and he also seemed quite emotional. I think twice during that conference, he looked like he was tearing up almost.
Yeah, I think everybody involved, as I said, it's just a very taxing experience.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael and Sarah.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Michael Hiblin, news director at KUAR, and Sarah Weitz-Kotecheck of Arkansas Public Media. And I'm Karen Trico-Stewart, the content development director here at KUAR. Thanks for listening to our Week in Review podcast, recorded at the KUAR studios in Little Rock. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, though we do maintain editorial independence. Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or listen to it at KUAR.org.